Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Point it this way.
Point it that way.
When I look at you.
So you know, some people's microphones are crooked, and I think that's okay.
You know? Yeah, you shouldn't. Your microphone is beautiful.
Absolutely.
I don't want people out there getting cosmetic microphone surgery just because they're uncomfortable about the shape. You know, it takes all sorts.
Exactly.
Horses for courses. What? No, don't do it with a horse.
No, absolutely not.
No,
I mean,
that's illegal.
Their microphones are. They're not compatible with humans as far
no.
as I'm
people
aware.
Have died.
They literally have.
I mean, it's urban legends, but one of them must be true.
Surely, yeah. Right? Mm. There's only so much space for a microphone.
Yeah.
You can't go much further than that.
The other way around, though, that's fine.
That's up until, I think, quite recently was okay in Germany.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Actually legal, was it?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
But I believe
you can't say that if you don't know if it's true.
It was slightly more relaxed.
Okay.
You could just sort of, as long
well,
as
I
you,
should hope it probably is quite relaxed, otherwise.
So you had verbal consent.
That's where it does get difficult if everyone needs to be relaxed.
Precisely. Anyway, the point is your microphone is now pointing at your face rather than at the wall.
Exactly. And, it's right up in my face.
We're ready to go.
Yep.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Triple Jump Podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Peter.
This is a video game podcast. It's about video games. It's always been about video games.
Yeah, all six episodes
all
of it.
All six episodes. I don't know why people would think any different,
especially
given our intros, usually, and this week in particular. We're recording slightly earlier this week, Peter. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice is but 2 days away
at
the time of recording and
at
the time of release is available now.
Well, because you're going on a jolly on Friday, aren't you? Thursday afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm having to record super early so that you can go and enjoy yourself.
I'm going for a big nerd weekend, sadly not to play Sekiro, but actually to play Bloodborne. I've mentioned it in previous ventures before that once a year, usually about once a year, we have a big old nerd meetup.
Yeah.
With a couple of friends at one of their houses, and we just sit there and play a From Software game through from start to finish in co-op, and it's super fun. We did it with Borderlands 1 year as well, actually, Borderlands 2.
Goodness me.
And this year it's Bloodborne.
Yeah.
It's Bloodborne's turn. I believe we've done Demon Souls, Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls Remastered.
Yeah.
And now we're doing Bloodborne. So I'm pretty excited.
So you've nearly run out. You better hope that. I mean, I guess you could do Sekiro next time.
Sekiro has no multiplayer.
Oh, of course it doesn't.
Sadly,
we were talking about this the other day on the way into work.
Trend bucker, a mother bucker.
Just all sit there with a separate telly and console and play it together, but not
play
together.
Separo.
Yes.
Separately.
Very good.
Which wouldn't be as much fun, unfortunately. But
no.
I'm looking forward to it. That's why we were recording early. I hope future Ben is enjoying Sekiro, and I hope people watching / listening at home are enjoying Sekiro too.
Maybe you'll be talking about it on the next episode in What We Play In.
That groundbreaking segment that nobody's ever experienced.
That's
before.
Coming up twice later on in, well, two. Well, I mean, we both bring an answer to it. We do it all
exactly.
in one go.
Yeah, it's one section, but we both have a go.
Later on in the podcast, enjoy that later.
I'll certainly be streaming it in the coming week. I'll be playing Sekiro.
Yes.
And that'll be very exciting. You can probably see me really struggle because, by all accounts, it's very different. very different. Yeah. There's no, there is a roll button, but instead of just being able to sort of spam roll like you could in Dark Souls and in Bloodborne.
Yeah.
You can't really do that here. There's a parry button, there's a jump button.
There's like a grapple.
And there's a grapple button too. But like those are the roll, jump, and parry buttons are how you want to sort of avoid being hurt in combat. And you can't spam one of them. You have to read enemies' attacks and press the right one, kind of like For Honor. So it's going to be a bit of a learning curve, and I'm probably going to really struggle.
Do lots of dying.
Sekiro Shadows die way more
died
than
like
twice.
Constantly. Shadows die.
At least 12 times.
Loads and loads of times.
So look forward to watching me very much struggle next time. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you very much. Yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying myself.
just generally.
Yeah, just right now.
Well, that's nice.
It's nice to do a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's nice that we're doing it early, getting out the way so that I can
edit. Such a hassle, isn't it?
Edit for the rest of the week. I mean, I barely have to do anything for the podcast, you know. I turn up and read from the sheet of notes that you mostly compile and then I scribble my own on top of it.
Right. But you're an integral part of this endeavor.
Yeah. Well, just like Worst Games Ever, right? You know, I couldn't do that without you co-hosting.
Right. Well, it wouldn't even exist without you editing it.
Well,
friend.
That's what I'm saying. You edit the podcast. I edit the Worst Games Ever. It's all one big symbiotic
happy family.
Yeah. It's like one of those wasps lays an egg inside a caterpillar.
It's just like that.
Makes the caterpillar climb to the top of a stalk. Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, so our first question, I'm really sorry I asked how you were doing.
Right.
Our first question comes from Rhys Jones. Mm. And Rhys Jones asks, The Last of Us Part 2 is my most anticipated game ever.
Oh.
And it will be the first game release that I take time off work for.
I like how Rhys is already planning to take time off work for a game that doesn't have a release date.
It doesn't have a release date yet. A restate. Yes. A restate yet. Have you ever taken time off work or school for a game release? Now, school, obviously... We would never do such a thing.
You can't take time off school.
You have to be poorly. Exactly. Yeah. Poorly.
Yeah, you don't have 27 days annual leave from school.
No, you don't, including bank holidays.
Yeah.
Now, I have not... I've only booked actual time off work once. Fortunately, since then, I've been...
You mean for a game, not
for
ever?
For games. Oh, yeah. I'm very committed to every job I do.
In my career.
I've got so much annual leave left. I've got like 6 years worth of annual leave.
You just take it all in one. You have like a month off in one go.
I'm going to retire 10 years early.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Sorry, please carry on.
Yeah, I've only booked time off work for the playing and enjoyment of video games. Just the one time. Mm-hmm. That was for Fallout 4.
Right.
And I didn't have much annual leave left anyway. I was working a terrible job at the NHS that I despised and was just slowly killing me. And I didn't have much annual leave left. I only had a half day that I could afford to take.
Right.
So Fallout 4, I was very, very excited about. And I booked a half day in the morning. So I'd pre-ordered digitally. I think it's still the only game I've pre-ordered digitally.
Okay.
So I was able to preload it. And so at midnight, I was able just to play immediately and basically tried to play for as long as I possibly could before I then had to go in for work at like lunchtime.
Right.
And Fallout 4 ultimately wasn't quite the incredible experience that I was hoping it would be. But I did really enjoy it. That was the only time, really. I've been fortunate. We've both been fortunate in that we've worked jobs in the last few years, or the last couple of years at least, where we've been able to be quite flexible with our time, particularly when covering games.
Well, yeah, it's part of the job.
We can just sort of excuse ourselves and say, I need to go and play this for work content.
Things.
Yeah. So Spider-Man was definitely one. I think you were actually staying at mine last year.
Yeah.
And I headed in early to download Spider-Man because we'd just got the code.
That's right.
And I just sat there and played Spider-Man for like an hour and a half to get to the point where we could make a video on it. And I just didn't want to stop.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, such so good.
Yeah.
So good. What about you, though?
Yeah, I mean, I think I once did a I'm not feeling very well today at school to play Skyrim. And I don't think that was even necessarily, it was neither immediately after release, so it was like, oh, I need to get this played. I don't think it was even after, like, I had picked up the game. So I didn't pick up the game until, like, a little bit after release,
right.
few weeks later. Then I had the game for a while, And then I think like a few weeks after having owned the game, one day I just decided, I don't want to go to school today. I want to play Skyrim.
I want to play Skyrim.
So I think I
told... What was your character called again?
I don't remember.
Oh, we came up with a... I mean, we didn't come up with... We spoke about the obviously factual real name that you gave your Skyrim character.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, I think so.
That's completely gone from my memory.
Darn. Gosh and darn.
But I also did a bit... Well, no, it wasn't the work... I mean, you kind of justified the Spider-Man one with, like, you know, we had to make a video about it, like, pretty much that day.
Yeah.
So you had to get us to a point. I took a day off on our spreadsheet when Spyro Reignited came out, despite the fact I was already working from home.
Right, you could have just done it. We wouldn't have known.
I could have just done it, but I wanted you guys to know that, like, right, on this day, I'm not going to get any editing done. So we all need to work around that and make sure that, you know, even if I do extra work before and after, or if you guys want to pick up some of the slack, like, I'm taking an official holiday so I can play Spyro.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I was going to do it earlier, because obviously they changed the release date. Mm-hmm. So I'd booked that day off at Yorkscast, and then they changed the release date, and I said, oh, can I cancel that holiday, please, and have it later.
Activision have ruined my dreams.
Yeah.
Temporarily.
But yeah, we're both like fairly good boys. I think we just wait until the evening. It gets you through the day, though, I think.
Yeah.
Or makes the day drag just on and on and on because you want to go home.
I do miss that excitement, though, because I used to get it about a lot of games. Like, I used to pretty much... When I was watching E3 maybe 5 or 6 years ago, everything from every conference would be like, oh my God, The Division looks incredible.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, it was sort of, it's fine. It's not my cup of tea. Some people really like it, but it certainly wasn't what was portrayed in the adverts initially as some sort of like post-apocalyptic survival game where it's you and your friends against the world and it promised this interesting, you know, dangerous environment for you to exist in, but really it's just kind of a shoot and loot kind of deal.
With some slightly wooden kind of E3 players all playing together. You know, that's always fun, isn't it?
I'm gonna release my drone. Releasing the drone. Oh, epic headshot.
Nice
man.
Shot, man.
Anyway, see you at the skate park tomorrow.
Yeah.
Where we work.
Anyone got any ammo? Sure. Have some of my ammo. Thanks, man.
Deploying ammo now. Here comes the roller droid. Do you see him? No, I don't see him. Okay, now I see him.
Hostiles ahead.
I hate it. Yeah. But yeah, I used to get excited about all of that stuff. Like, oh, amazing. I got to pre-order everything. Mm-hmm. But as time's gone by, there's less and less that I find myself... There's more, you know, I want to play games, but I find myself less and less excited about everything. It's partly cynicism. It's partly working within the industry.
Yeah.
But also, it's that the industry is very... It's far less, I feel like, romanticized and... sort of magical as it used to be when details about things were more scarce.
Yeah.
There's so much information now. It's not a bad thing, but there's so much information now that if you wanted to know pretty much anything about any game at any time, you can learn it, you can see it, you can watch it.
Yeah, that's true.
So very rarely does something come along that I get truly head over heels excited about. Spider-Man was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine I'll take time off when Borderlands 3 inevitably comes out.
Right.
When Skyrim came out, I pre-ordered it in an actual physical shop in game.
Right.
Went and picked it up, took it home, went upstairs on the Friday night, played it all weekend, and I only came downstairs once to open the door to get a pizza.
Right.
And as the rest of the time I was just in my room, just playing Skyrim all weekend.
Well, for two days.
Oh yeah.
You only ate one pizza.
No. That was the only time I went downstairs was to get a pizza. I did eat other than that.
But the food was upstairs.
The food was upstairs.
Okay.
So I was settling in.
Right.
It's the same with Mass Effect 2, actually, when that finally got released on PS3. I was very excited to play it. I took time off going to university classes. I was not very good at attending in my first year of university, and that was part of the reason I nearly got kicked out.
Yeah.
I basically spent an entire week playing Mass Effect 2 from start to finish.
Okay.
Just obsessively, not being able to put it down. And yeah, it doesn't happen too much anymore, but I'd say Spider-Man was the last time that happened for me.
I hadn't thought about uni. I'm sure there were many occasions where I didn't go into uni and I just stayed home playing games. I think, but back then I only played PC games. I didn't take my console with me to uni, so
right,
I will
okay.
have been playing something on Steam, but yeah, maybe Portal 2 or something like that.
Portal.
Okay.
Peter, it's time to move on.
It's time, Ben, for What Are We Playing?
Whoa! Peter, explain this, like, ridiculous, just this alien concept to me that I don't understand.
Okay,
explain.
Well, you know video games?
No.
Oh, well, you know TV?
Is that the one that's on the box?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the moving box thing. Uh-huh. A video game is when, like, by holding a thing in your hand, you can make the stuff on the TV do different things. And not just like a remote TV remote. Like, you can actually
like
make
a stick or a jammy dodger.
Yeah, no. Like, you can use the stick and the jammy dodger, and it makes the person move around how you want them to move.
Oh, wow.
So that's a video game.
Okay.
And
they're all like that? With the sticks and the jammy dodgers and the moving the person around.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
And to use the stick and jammy dodger and make the person move around is the verb to play a video game.
Oh.
To play.
What's a verb?
A verb is a doing word.
Well, okay.
Okay.
What's a word? No, it's fine.
And
I'll pick it up.
So in this segment, what we play in, we talk about the video games that we have been playing in our homes. Sort of this week or recently.
Okay.
Okay. Have you been playing anything?
No.
No. Okay, well, shall I tell you what I've been playing?
Please.
Okay. In the office, we do some playing of these games.
We do.
You this week have been playing some guitar. Not guitar.
Yes.
Guitar.
Sorry, yes. GTA.
GTA.
Yeah, that's how it's pronounced.
Gitav. Yeah.
Gitav.
GTA 5.
Absolutely.
I have been playing some Bagee.
Bagee. Your favorite. This is your favorite game.
This probably is one of my favorite games of all time. It must be top three, if not top two or top one.
Whoa!
Somewhere in that three way.
Ubisoft presents Beyond Good and Evil.
Ubisoft cries on stage about how happy he is. Oh, so touching.
Oh, bless him.
I tried for a long time to get it working on stream. Had so many issues, some huge issues. Hello, I'm huge issues.
Yes.
And I've now done two parts of a live stream on
Whoa!
It. And we had a lovely time last time. I had a very supportive audience. Hmm. People got very invested in the narrative.
Amazing.
Some sad boy things happen in particularly the sort of the second hour of the game.
Oh, no.
Second and third hours. So we watched the sad boy bits.
Yeah.
And it's a very cinematic experience. I think, like, given, although it came out 15, 16 years ago, it's got touches of Uncharted about it, I think, in terms of character relationships. And some of the stuff that you do is deliberately sort of staged in a very cinematic way so that someone sitting watching the game would probably get more enjoyment out of it than like your standard, you know, sitting watching someone in a combat segment. Like,
okay.
Yeah, you're wow, you axe that guy with your axe. Great. You keep doing that. But like, you know, quite often it's a bit of a spectacle. Mm-hmm. So I was very pleased that the viewing public at home were indeed engaging with it and thinking, this is good and I want you to keep playing it for now so I can see what happens.
Absolutely.
Because I was a bit concerned that, you know, after building it up across various video YouTube ventures that
we've
done.
He has a tattoo as well.
Yeah, I did. I don't. I can't show it on camera though.
It's on his microphone.
It's on, yeah. I thought you'd say it's on his micro penis.
Oh, well, I mean, same difference, isn't it?
Yeah. After having just sort of gushing about this game for so long, gushed about this game, it's nice to be able to go, and here it is. Do you think, am I justified?
Please
validate me.
Please be kind.
And people have done, and I feel okay about it.
Yeah, I watched, I tuned in from upstairs through the majority of your first stream, because I've been very curious about this game. At one point, I did buy it. Mm-hmm. Because I'd heard such good things before you were even a twinkle in my mind.
Ah.
And I just never played it. I never got around to playing it. No, I bought the PS3 HD re-release and just never played it. I've always been very interested in it, and it looks excellent. And you can watch the first two parts of Peter's live streams now on the YouTube channel.
Yes, you can.
And he'll presumably be resuming. Presuming next week,
as long as there's demand. Part two is definitely what I think the one that will hook you more than part one. You know, like when you watch the first episode of like Game of Thrones or something, you're like,
right,
okay, is this that thing that everyone was shouting about?
Yes, yeah, because there's the small man just slapped the child.
Yeah.
Right. There was some like zombie things at the start, but they've gone. Yeah, so I don't know what that was about.
Yeah. But the second one, things start to happen, and you're like, oh, this actually has a story, and it's got some sneaky sort of Splinter Cell style bits as well.
Okay.
A lot of, or like MGS, I made the comparison. Metal Gear Solid 1, right. Like watching the patterns of guards, patrols, and things like that.
Ah.
Sound distractions and things.
We should all definitely go and watch Peter play Beyond Good and Evil then every Monday.
Yeah, 3 p.m. on the GMT.
Triple Jump Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ Team Triple Jump. Yes, that is the boy.
Ben,
hello.
What you playing?
So, because we're doing this early and we record usually quite late, there hasn't been a great deal of time that's passed since we last recorded.
Yeah, that's why I had to settle for my stream game.
Right, well, I'm doing the same thing. So I haven't actually had anything to play, but we were talking about earlier before we recorded the podcast or started recording that... there's just not a great deal out there at the moment that either of us particularly want to play in terms of new releases. So Metro was the last one that I really wanted to play.
Yeah,
I've got things on my PS4, like the Hitman first season and stuff that was on PlayStation Plus and so on. But like, just feel no compulsion to really play it.
Yeah.
So I think Sekiro, however you choose to pronounce it, is going to fill that void. But for the time being, GTA started a new character. Introduced Barbara Pierce to the world of Grand Theft Auto. And that character creation suite is amongst the most baffling and probably worst character creation suites I've ever seen.
I was watching. I did not know that that's how...
Did you not?
No.
So my existing character, because I played a lot of GTA Online when it first launched a few years ago, but haven't really touched it since. I've just had the same character throughout, so I only experienced that character creation once. What you do is you choose your two parents from pre-selected models, and then there's a slider. You choose male or female, and then a slider that makes you more like the dad or more like the mum.
Yeah.
And it's just crap. Like, it doesn't work. Then you can go in and tweak finer details, but even then you don't have a huge amount of creative control over where it goes. It's just really confusing and strange. None of the buttons feel like they should be doing what they're doing. I kept trying to use the right analog stick to turn my character, but you have to, I think it's one of the shoulder buttons you turn, and they literally just turn their head because it's like a police... a mugshot sort of environment that you're creating your character in. But yeah, then they just snap back to facing forwards again. And it's really unwieldy and not very good at all.
It's like an inverse Fallout 4. You know, when the child, spoilers, the child is created from the two parents that you make at the start of the game.
Yeah.
But
ultimately, it's just skin tone that's affected, really.
But Rockstar have looked at that and they've decided, like, oh no, why don't we do it the other way around? Where, like, in order to create your person as a child, you have to control their parents first, as a gene pool.
Yeah, it's really
it's a strange
weird
choice. Really.
It's a really strange idea. I could see that maybe making a bit more sense in games like The Sims, where you're actively controlling, or there's an active presence of the parents, but like, you never see these people again.
You shouldn't be forced into it, really. Like, it's what, you know, if you wanted it in The Sims, like, oh, they've had a child, please generate, you know, what you think the child would look like based on these two parents. That's fine, but like, you should also have the option, like you do in The Sims, to just create a child as part of the family and be like, yeah, this is what the child looks like exactly, you know. I've got all these sliders and things. Such a strange idea.
But it's really weird. It was weird at the time. I was interested to see if it had evolved at all over the last few years. Hasn't really. I think there are more customization options now for tweaking the final character, but they've still got that ridiculous parental system.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, then obviously the first... They did have the official Barbara Pierce haircut, which was really nice.
That's fortunate.
Just the straight fringe... with the sort of bob that goes all the way around.
Yeah.
Really good look. Then we just sort of unleashed Barbara Pierce onto the world. She went around campaigning.
Viscerally.
Exactly. And there were all sorts of... They had the business suit as well that just makes her look like current British Prime Minister Theresa May.
The business suit.
Jesus. And she got a pink gun. I went on an adventure over the mountains. Got chased by the police a few times.
Oh, yeah.
Got shot down by the army in a plane.
Oh my God.
All sorts of adventures. And that should be up now on the YouTube channel if you want to relive that that ridiculous time. But that's pretty much all I've been playing, sadly. Mm-hmm. I'll have a lot of Bloodborne to talk about and hopefully some Sekiro next week to discuss. But do let us know in the comments below what you guys are playing. That's P-L-A-Y. So play in. So it's legally different from any other similar things. Not that there are any that you might experience online. Let us know what you're playing and what you're looking forward to in the comments below. Peter, what's the next question?
We've got a question here from Patricia Busquet, I'm hoping.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good attempt at that last name.
Busquet. B-O-U-S-Q-U-E-T.
Patricia
Busquet. Patricia Busquet. Sure. Would you ever purchase or play any of the board games that have come out of video games? For example, Fallout, Portal, Dark Souls.
Mm.
We have both played Dark Souls, haven't we?
We have, although we learned afterwards that we weren't playing by the correct rules.
No. We played at the house of What Culture's Scott Telford.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good time. Was Jules there? I
think Jules was there. Yeah,
it was the four of us playing it.
Yeah.
And that was fun. I'm not well versed on my Dark Souls. I've played a little bit of Dark Souls 1, like literally the first half hour or something at someone else's house.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep meaning to get around to Bloodborne, and I've asked for it for my birthday, actually. My birthday's coming
up. The video
up.
Game.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. I was thinking the other day, we should do a series called Bloodborne Bros and just do a co-op playthrough on the channel. But obviously, I'm streaming Bloodborne at the moment, so maybe that'll have to wait a little while.
We don't want to get overblooded, but... we've both played that. I think we had a good time. It didn't seem, I don't know, in some ways it seemed quite sort of Dark Souls brutal, but did I just say we both played Bloodborne? I think you
implied that, but you meant the board game.
I meant the Dark Souls board game, yeah.
I think there is a Bloodborne board game as well.
Though. Yeah, I think there is.
Yeah,
we both played the Dark Souls board game, and it in some ways it seemed quite brutal, as is characteristic of the video game. But in other ways, I don't know, maybe it was because we were playing it wrong. But I didn't feel like, you know, we were really up against it at the time.
Yeah, so obviously I'm a huge Soulsborne fan, and I love the idea of the board games, but I think particularly we were just trying to work it out as we went along.
Yeah,
you need a strong sort of driving force, sort of running the game.
Yeah.
Someone who's saying, right, now, so what this means is... So we used to play a lot of board games with Adam Blompier. When he used to live in the area. And that was... He was just so... As people familiar with his work might be, you know, not surprised to hear, he's just really good
at
narrating and providing context for board games. And he's a big board game fan.
He knows all the rules and stuff, yeah.
So I imagine playing that sort of game with him would be incredible and really interesting. Now, me personally, I don't have the inclination to play board games off my own back.
Right.
As much as I love the cool boxes they come in and how good it would look on a shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I think the price point is just too high for me to warrant buying them because I know I'd never play them.
Yeah.
And also it would mean that then if I buy them, I have to learn the rules, and I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
I want someone else to learn the rules and just guide me through
just
the
invite
experience.
You around. You can just take some Doritos with you and some cider and share it around and say, thanks for having me and for running this game for me.
Oh, I missed those days. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just about a year before we started regularly playing board games with Adam Blompier, which they were good times, I lived with a guy at uni who was also a big board game fella.
Yeah.
And he had a whole bunch of them. And we would occasionally in our kitchen, there was like four guys, we would play board games. And one of the ones was a video game one. It was the XCOM board game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And I only remember it quite vaguely because we played a lot of Pandemic at the same time. And sort of in my head, I'm like getting the two mixed up. But I do remember sort of you have to like put soldiers in certain areas. I think you like send them out on missions and stuff. There's a lot of like roll of dice chance. You get different cards with like different types of aliens on with their own stats and things like that.
Yeah.
And that I remember that being a lot of fun, actually. Mm. And it seemed like a relatively good simulation of the game in board form.
Yes.
Which
some board games, I imagine, probably aren't, you know?
Right.
I bet some are and I bet some aren't. But, like, I guess XCOM as a video game lends itself reasonably well to a board game because that's kind of what it is.
It's very statistical, very elaborate, based, and it's all chance-based.
You're just looking down on a bunch of figures moving around. They just happen to be animated and have particle effects. But it's kind of like a board game even when you play the video game. So it does translate well. But
I am fascinated by how they adapt these game properties into board games, because the gameplay of Dark Souls obviously does not translate to cards.
No.
But I feel like they've done a very admirable job of highlighting the steep learning curves and difficulty that you can face in Dark Souls and things like that, especially being able to play it with a few players as well and take down these bosses. And the minifigures are really cool. And some people have done like custom paint jobs and stuff on them that just look awesome.
Yeah.
And I'd be tempted just to buy the minifigures just to, have them on just to paint them.
I bet some people sell them online separately.
You can probably get surplus, you know, spare parts people just get those. I should look into that.
You should. I mean, we talk about, you know, how gameplay translates. I don't think I was aware that there was a Portal board game. How on earth does that work?
No, I didn't know that either. And there's a Fallout one as well.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, you can kind of understand that, like wandering around a wasteland. But how do you play Portal and board game form?
I don't know. I'm sure someone will let us know. But like the themed Monopolies, obviously there's a million different game versions, because it's just, you can just fart those out.
Yeah,
you anybody just can just
some,
crap, really. But a bespoke board game that's meant to emulate the feeling of playing the game is... it fascinates me, but I personally have no time for it unless someone else is going to help me.
When I was a kid, I had a bespoke, it wasn't just a Monopoly reskin of a Chicken Run.
Mm.
A Chicken Run board game.
Okay.
Which is a video game, technically. Was it? It was just adapted from...
Was it hard, man?
It was hard, man. It was reasonably hard, love.
Okay.
But that was fun. You sort of went around, you had to get this blueprint for a plan on how to escape. And there were loads of different ones. you know, make a seesaw and drop an anvil on and it'll fling you.
Right, like Mousetrap.
Yeah, a bit like Mousetrap. And then once you had this blueprint, you had to go around the facility, the chicken farm, and scrounge up, I need a plank of wood, I need I need a sieve, I need this, that, and the other. It's quite fun.
It did feel
a little bit like a prisoner of war kind of jailbreak style board game, but just with chickens.
Yeah. That's clever.
Yeah.
I like that.
It was good. Yeah. Anyway, going from something that was slightly weird as a concept, the Chicken Run board game, to even weirder, it's time for the news.
Weird.
It's really weird
it's
news.
It's weird news.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Peter Austin?
Yes?
I believe you've brought some weird news.
I have. Am I going first?
You aren't going first. It's your turn.
Oh, It's my turn. Okay.
He's getting out the weird phone.
Here it is.
He's going into the weird messages.
The bat weird.
Are you able to send yourself messages on Facebook?
That's how I send myself links to things.
Yeah,
when
I've seen you do that before. I didn't realize you could send them to yourself.
Yeah, you have to search for yourself, because you don't come up on the list. But if you just type your name in.
Search for the hero inside yourself.
How do you...
I don't know the next line.
How do you get links to yourself?
I email myself.
Oh, so many extra steps.
Always email myself. Well, I've always got Gmail open in a tab on my browser.
Oh, okay.
Always ready to go. So.
Police detain 10 teenagers in India for playing... I didn't want to shout into the microphone.
Okay, sorry. That was a deliberate technique. My bad.
Creak that. For those not watching on video, Ben just lent the microphone right into my face.
I was worried.
Police detained 10 teenagers in India for playing Player Unknown's Battlegrounds.
Oh, no.
It's a banned game.
It's a banned game?
Yeah.
In Thailand?
In India.
Did you say? In India, sorry. I just immediately connected the dots. I didn't quite hear that. He must have said Thailand.
No, I didn't.
Why is it banned?
I said teenagers.
Oh, okay. That might have been enough
banned.
For me.
Teen band. Or Thailand.
Oh, Thailand. Yeah, that sounds like it's just tuned out for a second.
Police in the western Indian state of Gujarat detained 10 teenagers for breaking a newly announced ban on the online video game PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, PUBG.
Oh, my God.
The forerunner of Global Smash Fortnite. I mean, yeah, I guess so. It's a slightly weird way to...
That was a really weird sentence, wasn't it?
This is according to The Guardian.
Oh, nice one, The Guardian.
So to The Guardian, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is just the forerunner of Global Smash Fortnite. I mean, PUBG was
doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Fortnite exists and that's it.
The ban was announced last week by local authorities to combat what they called the spread of, quote, violent traits in kids playing the game.
Oh, that's such a shame. Now India's getting in on it.
Yeah.
Just as we're moving past it in the West, the East now has a go too.
They were taken into custody, but later released with a warning.
Oh.
Said Manoj Agrawal, police commissioner of Rajkot City in Gujarat. Sorry for mispronouncing 50% of that sentence.
That was admirable. Well,
yeah. Due to these games, the education of children and youth are being affected, and it affects the behaviour, manners, speech, and development of the youth and children.
Right.
Okay. Not a very good sentence, but that may have been translated. Who's to say?
It probably was.
An order by the local police dated 6th of March said... Okay.
Good. Okay.
Do you know what's not banned?
What's not banned?
Fortnite.
Right.
You know, because PUBG is the forerunner of global smash hit Fortnite.
Yeah, I thought Fortnite has better shooting than PUBG. Surely Fortnite presents more of a danger and also presumably building code violations as well.
Well, I guess Fortnite is a bit more cartoony looking than PUBG. Which
makes it fine.
Yeah, exactly. Just if you just up the saturation on your game, you can have people decapitating babies whenever you like. And that's fine because it's just, if it goes, woo,
wow,
as it happens.
Yeah, it's all right.
Then it's...
just get a little clown horn in.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
Asked in a public debate in January about the negative effects of video games on kids, the Indian Prime Minister... Narendra Modi says,
yeah.
Was he playing PUBG? Like everything else, technology too comes with its positives and negatives. I don't know what that's in reference to. Was he playing PUBG?
Yeah, who? Was he playing PUBG?
It doesn't say. Literally, the article doesn't say who he is.
That's so odd.
Or did someone ask the Prime Minister if he has been playing PUBG? I don't know. Sorry, but The Guardian just don't know what they're doing.
It's just weird. The Guardian? Come on, The Guardian.
As parents, we must guide our children to get the most from technology. We should encourage their curiosity to learn new things, like how to shoot each other.
Yeah. Build tall objects.
Yeah. Fortnite and PUBG, each backed by Chinese internet company Tencent, are credited with helping take video games to new audiences. Bluehole and Epic Games did not immediately respond to requests for comment.
That's so frustratingly backwards, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess in a sense it's probably a big discussion left for later, but you know, the whole idea of do video games cause violence, that's a big topic that's been talked about a lot in various...
No, though.
Because
if you're prone to violence, then you have deeper issues that video games wouldn't necessarily have enabled you to act on.
Yeah.
Films, music, whatever it is, if you've got the impulses, then there's something that runs deeper than video games.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, I saw a pretty humorous quote about, I think it was like a month ago or something, about how video games are the leading cause of street crime or something. And it said, right. You do realize that, I think it was video games and it was and TV or like some other home-based hobby.
Yeah.
And basically the response was, you do realize that like if kids are in at home playing video games, they're not out on the streets like beating each other up. Like in a sense, video games are a way to combat street crime by getting the kids off the streets.
Yeah, go commit virtual crimes, not real crimes.
Yeah.
It also just doesn't make sense because almost, unless they're very, very inventive, the entirety of all violent and criminal actions that can be undertaken in various video games are based on things that happened before video games existed.
Yeah, of course.
It's not symbiotic.
No.
You know, someone held someone up at gunpoint long before you could do it in GTA.
Mm.
People don't do it because they did it in GTA. People do it in GTA because you can do it in real life.
Well, my gamer...
doesn't make sense.
My gamer uncle, who I sometimes talk about on our various outlets, always says, all right, so are they going to ban the news then? Are they not going to put the news on until after the watershed, like 9 p.m? Because the stuff that you see, you know, the first headline on the news at like 6 o'clock is always something pretty brutal.
Yeah.
You know.
There's never good news.
12 dead in whatever because someone did a bad thing, you know. Whether it's at home or in a foreign country, there's always things going on, and films as well, and TV, and you know, at what point do you stop children looking at a screen that's got any kind of violence on it, or you know, should they not be reading Goosebumps because that's got people being cut? I don't know if it has actually, but
you know, absorbed by blobs and things, sucked into the sink.
No, I don't.
Sort of fetishes, I think, mainly. That's what R.L. Stein is, a big fetish man.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think most of it is his sort of weird way of marketing his fetishes to children.
There was one where some kids found some kind of cosmetic in like a junkyard, and for some reason they put it on their skin. I don't know why. And they turned into dogs. But slowly, you know, they got all furry first.
Yeah.
And then eventually, yeah.
No amount of cosmetic can cover up that.
They were dog boys.
You can't dog just those darn dog boys. It's especially weird, though, that they chose to ban a particular game.
Yeah.
What was it that PUBG did, do you think, that caused them to ban it?
Yeah, because they've not banned, I mean,
video games full stop.
Yeah, they've not banned Fortnite, but they've not also banned, I'm sure, several games that are arguably more violent than PUBG, or more gory, or more realistic and gritty.
But weird.
For some reason, I guess because it's popular with younger kids than certain other ones.
Children are committing crimes. What do they do in their spare time? Well, they're playing a video game. What video game? Right, ban it. Because we have to address the failings in our own policing and education systems by blaming something.
Yeah.
We need a scapegoat. And this scapegoat happens to be PUBG. Forerunner to smash hit
Forerunner. Yeah. That's some semi-weird news.
Oh, thank you.
We had to divvy up a very weird news story, didn't we? You've brought to us today. I don't know the full details, so I'm interested to hear what you've got to say.
So big thank you to Fizzy Karma at Fizzy Karma on Twitter for making us aware of this. Mm. Peter, are you familiar with the supermarket Aldi?
Or all Aldi. These little things. Oh, no, that's the other one.
Aldi or Aldi.
Aldi.
Those of you who aren't, Aldi or Aldi is the common brand of two German family-owned discount supermarket chains with over 10,000 stores in 20 countries and an estimated combined turnover of more than 50 billion euros.
In Europe, you may know it as Hofer.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Hofer with an umlaut.
Ah. Did you know that Lidl, which is a very similar store...
Yeah, every Lidl helps.
Every Lidl helps.
Yeah, Tesco, not, every Lidl helps.
There's Lidl and Aldi in the UK, at least.
Mm.
And they're owned by two different brothers. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, two different brothers owned Lidl and Aldi, and that's why you'll frequently find, if you get one, you'll find the other one not too far away.
Right.
Because they stock stuff that the other doesn't. So if you need something from Lidl that you can't find, if you go to Aldi, there's a good chance you'll find it in there instead.
Do you think there's like a big age difference? And one of them's the Lidl brother and one of them's the Aldi brother.
A lot Aldi brother.
Yeah, he's much Aldi.
I could have been a lot Aldi brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, there's a little fun fact about supermarkets for you. Mm. They're amazing supermarkets. They've got a central aisle and they sell DVDs and like
weird
wood
surplus.
Chippers and what? Slippers.
Whatever's
and
going that week.
It's really strange. I bought a pair. I went in. I got a quiche. I got a pint of milk. Yeah. I bought
a lawnmower,
Iron Man 1 on DVD.
Yeah.
And I also bought a pair of jogging bottoms.
Right.
I did actually buy jogging bottoms from either Lidl or Aldi, whichever one. I can't remember what the difference is between the two. I went to one of them and I did buy a pair of very nice jogging bottoms for £10 that I still wear to this day.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice.
Still
very
wearing
nice.
Them.
I'm wearing them right now.
He's never taken them off.
Can't actually because they've sort of boa constricted to my skin.
Right.
So I'm the dog boy now.
Yeah.
I got the fluff on.
Gross.
Me.
What's happening?
Sorry.
In Aldi Town.
They have a new gaming promotion to target those pesky kids who are obsessed with video games.
Especially the ones in India who are playing Forerunner to Fortnite and killing each other.
So this is just in the UK, it appears, and we now go to Destructoid who reports Tea Time Takedown. So it's called, is an upcoming promotion designed to get kids back into the real world. And best of all, it requires no responsibility to make it happen. Simply hand over your child's gamer tag to the grocery outlet. And between March the 22nd and March the 31st, Aldi may send a squad of professional gamers to hunt them down in game and take them out. Ostensibly sending them to the dinner table where you can discuss why you failed them on a social and disciplinary level.
God.
I'm not sure if anyone's clued Aldi in to the concept of respawns, it continues. I won't deny that I appreciate Aldi's prices, but this promotion seems to be ill-advised, reaching somewhat outside of their comfort zone of low-priced food and into parental/child psychology. Here's hoping that the tea time you spend together will afford you the opportunity to talk to your child about their hobbies, learn a little about why they find video games so exciting a pastime, and perhaps implement your own fair rules about restricting their usage like a parent should.
Yeah.
So that's the story. Aldi have basically launched this promotion. What's it called again? Sorry. Tea Time Takedown. Where there's an accompanying video and it's typical, like, standard, just tired, old, stereotyped fare of, yeah, like, a child not at the dinner table because they're upstairs, obsessed with their video game, and there's no way to get them to come down.
It's probably playing that same sound effect that they've been using for video games since about 1990.
Just some Pac-Man noise. Yeah, just some sort of explosions.
Yeah.
If you hand over the gamer tag, a squad of professional gamers will hunt them down in-game, and then it's sort of... That's their plan. It's like, okay, so what's next then? Yeah, well, then they come down for dinner.
Yeah, they'll
like,
go, oh, what? No, I got shot.
But they probably won't. You know that you do die in a game, as it says in the article, and you respawn and you do come back.
Yeah.
They might just carry on playing.
They might not realize they're being targeted. They might just think, oh, that guy's quite good.
Oh, that guy's pretty good. So I've got some questions here that this raises. Firstly, obviously, it's very reductive of games as a hobby to just be like, well, let's call for the man. Send him in.
Yeah.
Beat up Jimmy, little Jimmy.
Just sort your kid out if you've got a problem with it. Sort it yourself.
Exactly. So it doesn't need to be that. It plays on tired stereotypes that of course, children are going to be obsessed with video games. It's exciting and interesting. Have you seen video games?
Mm.
Have you seen what they look like now?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And they're sort of have actual cinematic narratives and things like that, and you care about people.
Like
The Last of Us 2, you know, Reese can't wait for that because The Last of Us 1 was an incredible experience. It's not just about blowing someone up.
Exactly. Or they might be playing Minecraft where they're actively being very creative.
Which is on the curriculum in several European countries.
Precisely. So that's stupid anyway to play into that. Secondly, they're a supermarket chain.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Who are you?
Single-player games exist is something else that I realise. How on earth are you going to stop your child from playing The Last of Us? They shouldn't be playing The Last of Us anyway.
No.
But how on earth are you going to... What are you going to do? What the pro gamer's going to do? I don't get it.
Yeah, when they're in their single-player Minecraft.
You're going to swap
campaign.
Them?
Yeah.
You're just going to kick down their door?
Oh, my gosh.
Next one. How are you going to even fill a lobby without being invited?
Yeah.
So presumably you get hold of this child's gamer tag. Firstly, how do you verify it is a child and not just someone... taking you for a ride because this promotion is stupid. How are you going to get into their game without being invited?
Yeah.
It's going to be incredibly obvious that someone is up to no good when suddenly the entire opposite team is filled with I don't know. It's not even
Aldi
possible.
Aldi underscore.
Exactly. What's it called? Squad of Professional Gamers.
Aldi so, Squad underscore James.
Professional One. Yeah. And so on. Thunderbird 1 through 5.
I think this, like, for example, one of the only multiplayer games I play at the moment is occasionally I still play a bit of Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
And unless you like, try and join my game through PlayStation, and therefore, you know, I have to know who you are, or I have to have the settings on that allow you to do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that in Battlefront. Mm-hmm. You can't just type in a gamer tag. You just go into matchmaking and hope that
you find them.
Yeah, in that 1 in 10,000 of, you know, players, or and however many.
Presuming that the squad means they fill out an entire team.
Yeah.
Presumably. So you're going to need to just get into a party with basically a full team and just keep searching until you find this guy. Because if you get invited, my next one is, what game could this possibly work in?
Yeah.
Because no multiplayer games have a functionality where you can just invite someone to go, like, it doesn't work like that.
No.
There may well be a game, having said that, where you can invite someone to your game and then they can switch sides and go to the other team.
Mm-hmm.
But presumably that's already an active lobby because the child needs to have teammates.
Yeah.
So the other side is already going to be slightly filled as well. So the chances of joining with an entire team all ready to go is highly unlikely. Even then, the child has to invite you themselves,
yeah,
which isn't going to happen.
No.
The last one that I've got here, what if the kid's really good?
Yeah, this
what if the kid just absolutely pantses them?
This professional squad of professional gamers.
How do you even qualify? How do you quantify your professionalism when it comes to video games? I know I'm a professional gamer.
Yeah.
Obviously, pro streamer, pro gamer.
Absolutely.
But
you don't work for Aldi.
I've got a degree in pro gaming.
Mm.
Pro gaming.
An MLG degree.
Exactly, from the University of Mulk.
Yeah.
I don't... All of this just seems very poorly thought through.
Mm.
Love the supermarket. Don't really understand what they're trying to do here.
No.
Or how it's even going to work. But the promotion runs, at the time of recording, next week.
Right.
So hopefully we'll get some fun stories out of it, maybe.
Yeah.
And we'll have to do another report back in a couple of weeks and see what actually happens. But thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. It's just so dumb, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
It's really dumb.
Thank you for passing that our way. We've got another question, Ben.
Yes.
And there's sort of a running trend I've realised through this. So question one, not really question one, but certainly the Aldi story.
Yes.
And the India story. It's about sort of games being a bad influence on children.
Yeah.
You know, get them down for tea. Stop them being in India attacking each other. Question three comes from Matthew Slater. Sorry, said Salter. Ben and Peter, considering Sekiro is released this week, I will be spending a disgusting amount of time this weekend doing nothing but sitting on my sofa, controller in hand, possibly eating at certain intervals. When I look back, I've spent a horrendous amount of time in some games. 500 plus hours in one Oblivion playthrough comes to mind. It's said a language can be learned fluently in a similar amount of time. Do you ever have trouble justifying the amount of time you spend gaming? Or do you, like me, consider it as easily justifiable as any other hobby, like fishing, for example? Greetings from the Netherlands. Now, this is an interesting thing.
Yes.
So my parents, although now that I'm doing this as a job and they do watch the videos, they can see some point to me being a gamer. But until I was working at What Culture, they thought that gaming is essentially a complete waste of time. You should be outside in the hills and dales fishing,
there's that
playing
hoop.
Football.
There's that hoop in the dirt road.
Roll the hoop.
Yeah.
But I have never agreed with that. There's so much from video gaming that I have learned. Like, it's literally a learning tool for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's the example here about, you know, in 500 plus hours, you can fluently learn a language. I'm not saying I fluently learned a language from video games, but I've learned a bit of Spanish from Resident Evil 4. I've never had a Spanish lesson in my entire life. We didn't do it at school. Mm-hmm. It was an option. I chose German.
Yeah,
I know that. I mean, they're not phrases that I would necessarily use in conversational Spanish.
Right.
You know, the word cabron,
sure,
means it's either a homophobic slur.
Yeah.
Or I think it's sometimes used in the context of cuck.
Okay.
Or it can also just mean a general sort of asshole, bastard kind of thing.
Right.
Depending on the context, it's one of those things.
Okay.
The cultists say moria es vivir, which means dying is living.
Oh.
To die is to live. You know, you don't walk into
beautiful.
A... Yeah, you don't say 2 pints, please. Dying is living.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've learned things there. And equally, you know, in games set in historical settings or you know, I've learned bits of science from certain games that we didn't cover in school. Geography. You know, like, I've learned history from Assassin's Creed games, like, more than I covered on the national curriculum.
Yeah.
Things like that. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, in much the same way, I suppose you wouldn't go to Latin America and order a beer and say Resquiacat in Pace.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just stab him. Just stab him with your hidden right between the eyes.
Yeah.
Ultimately, video games have always had their detractors, and there always will be detractors. But we have to grasp onto the fact that these people are dying out. More and more people are growing up with video games, and fewer people are alive who never experienced them in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like possibly maybe the generation above us were the last, or were probably the, hopefully
fringe.
the last people who really had to fight to justify playing video games. Because you and I, as you said with your parents, and very much the case with me as well, like they wanted me outside and doing other things. I think just because it's important to encourage your child, not like older you're doing. It's important to encourage your child to go out and exercise and experience a vast, diverse hobby base.
Yeah, you shouldn't just be playing games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I've grown up, and as you've grown up, and talking to our parents like adults and explaining what we do and the importance of video games and how big this industry is, it's becoming less and less a case of, well, I spent the weekend playing video games. Oh, that's a bit of a waste of time. That sounds awesome. I wish I could have played video games all weekend.
Yeah.
What it boils down to is, does it make you happy? Because if it makes you happy and you enjoy it, then it's not even about it being a perfectly okay hobby to do. It's that you derive some pleasure from doing it, and that's really what it should be about.
Yeah, I mean, Matthew gives the example of fishing at the end of his thing. You know, that's quite a good kind of comparison to make, because it's one thing saying, you know, going out playing football or going running, because there's a health aspect to that. But fishing, you know, it's not super strenuous. I know every so often you might get a whopper.
Whoa.
Oh,
reel it in. It's huge.
Ah.
Oh, no, he's taken my rod.
Or, you know, something like darts or pool or snooker, you know. I don't think your parents would necessarily have a big problem with you if you went down to the youth club and played a game of pool with your friends in the village. So there's not really a reason why they should have an issue with you going out playing video games. I mean, that's the other thing, is the social aspect to it. I've met people... I've become friends with people through playing games.
Yeah.
I remember in my early days of YouTube, I played games with a guy called Chris, and we would occasionally upload videos.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we ended up just like meeting up and hanging out. He lived in just north of Newcastle.
Yeah.
And I went to uni just north of Durham. That's where I was living. And he just came down once. Like, we hung out, we had dominoes, and I think we watched some Doctor Who and stuff.
Nice.
And that's just a guy I met gaming on YouTube. And, we've got jobs through it, we've met people through it.
Yeah.
And then
after the dominoes, of course, you both sat on toilets side by side, held hands while you both had...
Well, they only had one toilet.
Just furious diarrhea. Well, you took it in turns.
Someone was in the sink.
Oh, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
It has the consistency, it'll go right down.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But there's that whole... You know, I think the image that some parents who don't have a high opinion of video games have in their minds is someone sitting on their own in the dark, like with... You know, playing Manhunt or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole lot more to it than that. You know, I've played Minecraft on multiplayer servers and done some amazing creative projects and things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to be a militant asshole about it, because there's just... I really don't want to quote Donald Trump, but there really are just bad people on both sides.
Right.
Just because, like, some people will be like, oh, video games, what the hell? And some people will be like, well, actually, let me tell you about video games. It's this, and you just come across like a really obnoxious person that's being, you know, talking down to people that probably just don't really understand it
or
know what it is. Like, if someone asked me that didn't really play games, oh, what are you doing this weekend? I'd say, oh, well, I'm going to sit and just probably play video games all weekend rather than going, I'm going to play video games all weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of it. You know, yeah, it's context sensitive. Mm. But as long as you're enjoying it and you can read a room, yeah, I think it's fine. Mm. Like, just do what makes you happy, especially when a new game comes out.
Yeah.
Go crazy. People sit there and binge. I think now more than ever, people can understand binging with Netflix and
yeah,
stuff. You know, parents sit there and they watch a whole season of Stranger Things in one night because mm-hmm, they can't stop watching. Why the hell can't you play a video game?
Yeah.
I think that's fine.
I think
they'd probably agree now in 2019.
Well, yeah. Like I think nowadays as well, especially, you know, there's the whole thing that people say about the Wii was good because your grandma could play it.
Right.
And now that we've got like actual home VR headsets coming out.
Yeah.
I know it's not exactly like full mainstream wide distribution, but you see a lot of clips nowadays of like mums and grands and stuff playing VR. And some of them don't really seem to be enjoying it. They're just screaming on their chair,
yeah,
coiled up. But some of them, I'm sure, are probably thinking like, oh, is this that video gaming thing that I've been saying is like really bad for you this whole time? I would love like one of my parents to sit down and just play through like, you know, Uncharted 4 with me, or
yeah,
you know, just something with like a really good narrative. You know, I know my girlfriend sat next to me and watched me play through all of Drake's collection, mm-hmm, and she didn't really want to miss it. Like, she said, oh, you're not going to play Uncharted tonight, are you? Before, because I'm home late tonight. And it's like, oh no, I'll wait. And she doesn't like using a controller, but
yeah,
she enjoyed just sitting watching a very cinematic experience. So there's, yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why.
It takes all sorts. There's definitely something to be said for encouraging people to try video games, or at least, yeah, trying to educate them, but just make sure you go about it in a way that doesn't make you look like a dick.
Yeah.
And also, when people talk down to you, just go, oh, okay, well, you know, last of a dying breed. So it's,
oh my God, yeah.
So it's fine, or whatever, soon, whatever. Yeah. Enjoy Sekiro, Matthew. Enjoy,
yeah,
the hell out of it.
You
sit in
it,
those pants. Eat that bad food when you can be bothered to, and play that video game. Who cares?
Yeah.
Just enjoy yourself.
Go for it. Don't go fishing.
God, ultimately, just don't go fishing. I think what we've all learned here today is just screw fishing.
Just sit at home, play Sega Bass Fishing for three days.
You could do it at home. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, terrible. Anyway, we're running a little long, but it's time for our big discussion.
Went on for a long time.
It's time for the big discussion.
It is.
Google. Mm. They held a very exciting press conference.
Sorry, everyone. I just brushed my microphone.
Did you?
Yeah, I went.
I caught the corner of my eye. I thought you'd... Oh, don't wipe your nose on it. I bet it stinks.
Yeah.
Mine really smells. Mm. It's got sort of like Wrestle Boy spittle.
Spittles,
on it.
Yeah.
Not that Wrestle Boys, you know, have worse spittle. I'm just saying, like, they have exclusively used this microphone before us. GDC, Game Developers Conference. It's an annual meeting of developers, publishers, store places, platform holders,
press,
all sorts, press, and it's sort of a very in event, if you get what I mean. Whereas E3 is very outward facing, GDC is inward facing. You know, you have Gearbox last year showing off their new engine to, you know, industry colleagues and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The Last of Us is or Naughty Dog's Neil Druckmann holding a talk about storytelling in video games and stuff, and talking to his fellow industry colleagues and stuff. So it's a very very interesting industry event to observe from afar.
Yeah.
But probably going might be a little unexciting, just
yeah,
because there's not always stuff happening. But
just
this year,
big people rubbing shoulders, isn't it?
Basically, yeah, and sharing tips and yeah, secrets and discoveries and some of their favorite games
that
they are making.
Yeah.
Google's there. Now, obviously, this spells big things because Google, I don't know if you've heard of them, but they've got a lot of money and they kind of own all of us.
Yeah, they do the Chew Tubes, don't they?
They do the Chew Tubes. They actually own our mortal souls and all of our personal information and emails and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
They're getting in the game. Mm. They've decided to throw that hat into the ring. And this is a huge deal because the last person to do that with any money and weight behind them was Microsoft.
Mm.
And they're very much still alive and kicking now.
Yeah.
So they've announced their new console, the Google Stadia.
Mm.
Horrible name.
It is.
But we might get used to it, like the PlayStation Vita.
Yeah.
Or the PlayStation Move. Or What are the horrible? The Nintendo Wii.
Wii.
Or the Wii U.
That was a strange name.
It's very strange.
This is a quick anecdote. When I was at uni, we had a stats module
Wii.
Where we had to go and...
Nintendo Wii had it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Nintendo Wii had a stats module where we had to go and learn how to do stats. It was really boring.
Yeah.
And we had this proper, like, anorak stats teacher. You can just picture him. I don't have to describe him.
Right.
And we were doing this, like, stupid thing where we were... doing stats about like the local attractions of a city, and he was going, you know, all sorts of reasons why someone might come to a city. You know, parks, stadia, and that was his plural for stadiums.
Oh God,
I just found that so pretentious.
I know, I visit the city for the stadia.
Yeah, the stadia, not the stadiums, the stadia.
Your stadia are beautiful.
They are.
Don't get them trimmed.
No, please leave them alone.
Good God, yeah. So it's called Stadia. It had the most cringe-worthy. They did a live stream, basically announcing it and talking all about it. There, it had a very cringe-worthy video to begin with, like. Humans have been playing games since before they were humans, and it's just sort of evolved from there. And they were playing in the stadia with their stick ball and their ball sticks.
Right.
And then it was like, but recently technology has been amazing. And it was all very, you could tell it was angled at the mainstream press.
Yeah.
And Doom, the Doom fellas from id were there as well, talking about Doom. And I noticed how they did not show any gameplay footage at all. I was like, go on. I did a tweet. Show a monstrous decapitation to the mainstream journalists, yeah. You cowards. Do
it. He described it in a very tame way. He says something like, you know, you're a very powerful soldier. You're like an unstoppable force.
You rip eyeballs out. Come on, man. Yeah. It's a video game.
No,
have fun with it.
He just described him as like a very powerful force who's sort of unstoppable, going through incredible worlds.
Oh, incredible worlds.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've broken it down from an article from IGN, which we will link in the description.
Yeah.
All the links, all the websites that we've referred to today will be linked in the description if you want to read them in full. So I've put together some bullet points, running down what this console is and what it's about. Firstly, it's not really a console.
No.
It's not even actually a piece of hardware. It's a streaming platform.
Mm.
So we were talking about streaming previously.
In a previous podcast.
If anybody is going to make it happen and has the money to make it happen, Google is really the company to sort of push it forward. So we'll discuss the merits and as we go.
Do they actually have the infrastructure? We'll get onto that.
I hit my microphone there.
Oh, okay.
But we'll start off. So here we go. So it's got integrated YouTube. This is all just from the article, so it might be a bit higgledy-piggledy.
Higgles-piggles
in the ordering. But it's got integrated YouTube capture, streaming, sharing, and there's a button on the controller. So the thing you basically need is the controller, really.
Mm.
It doesn't say if it's mandatory. You might have virtual controls on tablets and things.
Yeah, possibly.
Because obviously due to the nature of streaming, the game is being hosted and run somewhere else.
You need Google Chrome is what you need,
right?
Apparently.
So you can then play it on pretty much any device that's supported. So you can play it on a tablet. You can play the latest big blockbuster releases on a tablet because you don't have to run it on the tablet. It's just streaming basically the footage to it.
Yeah, it's being run elsewhere.
You do the inputs and that's being streamed back or sent back to wherever it's being hosted and so on and so forth. So they're going big on that, just like the PS4 has a capture button, a share button on it, which I think is a really good idea.
Yeah.
Obviously, it makes sense for them to have integrated YouTube because being Google, it's going to be as easy as pie.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to stream games in 4K at 60 frames per second, both playing and streaming. And they have goals of eventually doubling that to 8K and 120 frames per second.
Yeah, which sounds ambitious, but I mean, they've said themselves that it's more powerful than PS4 and Xbox One combined.
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 Combined. So they're running it off their ridiculous computers elsewhere.
Yeah.
And presumably they can just upgrade those as they go with no cost to you.
Yeah, guess so.
Because you're not paying for a console or anything like that. So they showed off instantly accessing a game while watching a streamer playing it. So there's no download needed, obviously. So that there was someone streaming a game and there was like, play Assassin's Creed Odyssey next to it. They could play it instantly launched. You didn't have to load anything. Just immediately worked and they could play it too.
Mm.
Tablet/Chromecast on TV are two of the places they talked about being able to play it. So you can just...
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a Chromecast stick or whatever it is that you can plug into the back of your TV, or if you've got a smart TV as well, presumably that'll be supported in time.
Yeah, you'll just need your controller. The controller incidentally has the Konami code printed on the back.
Yeah,
which
nice
is a bit weird. It says, and it says something about Google underneath. It's like literally just because I heard that it was there, and I was like, is it some? Is it like Morse code or something? No, it's literally just printed on the back.
It's literally just the Konami code, like, hey, we know you like games, idiot. Look at our game reference.
And also, it has the PlayStation layouts of sticks rather than one up there and one down here.
A lot of people prefer that. I
don't mind it.
I'm stick dexterous. I don't mind.
Yeah, me too.
I can adapt to either. I'm far more used to the PlayStation controller, whereas it seems Xbox users have difficulty adapting.
Right.
To the, and Switch users, actually, because they've got the inverted things when you slide the Switch controllers into the little thing that makes it look like a puppy.
The little thing.
The little thing, the oldie thing. So officially, Google have partnered so far with Unreal, Unity, Havok, and several development companies. Mm. Ubisoft and id have are confirmed to be supporting them as a third-party company. And Doom Eternal is definitely coming to Stadia, as they announced sort of haphazardly, not really wanting to show anything off because they'll scare people.
Yeah.
So the one of the exciting things that they talked about was state sharing. So I've put a description of how I understand it. Feel free to correct me or hop in here.
Sure.
But state sharing allows players to share a link to their game, much like a time-coded YouTube video link. Mm. So if you want to share a YouTube video with someone but a particular time code, you have an option to click at the bottom that says share at some like 1 minute, 34 seconds, or wherever you are in the video. And then when you click that button, the link has a special code on the end. So when someone else loads it exactly at that point in the video. So players can then literally load up the spot they're in a game. So I could be halfway through a level in, I don't know, something.
Yeah.
Something very linear, presumably. Mm. Because it wouldn't work with everything. Like GTA, I imagine, wouldn't really work. Open games, you can't load into that exact... Like a Bethesda game, you can't load that exact instance for yourself.
Well,
I wouldn't have thought.
It sounds... The way they were pitching it is that there's all sorts of information you can include in this link. So it's not just geographical location. It sounds to me it's like almost the entire state. You know, like when you're emulating a game, you can save state.
Yes.
You can do a save state. Well, they said you can include in this link inventory items, health. I think like they gave an example of like, oh, so if you're playing a horror game and you've got like no health left and like one bullet and then suddenly a zombie jumps out and bites your neck.
Yeah.
Then you can share. If you're a YouTuber, for example, you can then once you've streamed that and gone, oh, wow, wasn't that fun? Thanks for watching, everyone. You can play that too and show me how you handled it. And you can send that exact moment of like an enemy, zero health items, one bullet in this geographical location within the game. That's what they said that it's.
Yeah.
It can do.
It's like a lot of the stuff they were talking about. It's sort of not, I don't want to dismiss it by saying it's hypothetical, but I am hesitant to believe that that will work in every game. I think certain games, particularly indie games, I still think it's an incredible idea to literally send Peter a link and just say, hey, give this a try. And then he loads into that exact same instance and can then play it for himself, because that creates all sorts of opportunities for replayability, for doing challenges and things like that. Say, here's my link. Give this bit a try with what I had in my inventory at the time or whatever. Q Games, who have published lots of titles, people may be familiar with the Pixel Junk games from a few years ago. They're apparently building an entire game just around this feature, which will be interesting to see. Tequila Works, who worked on Rime, then popped up and demoed sort of Stadia's development tools by saying that it took them a little while to get the art style down for Rime that they wanted. And Stadia is going to come sort of built in with various development tools, one of which is art style. So you can just press a button and it'll completely change how the world is rendered around you to look a certain way. That sounds cool, but surely there is a limit to the amount of those that exist. And will games not end up potentially looking very similar?
Well,
people who use it, that is.
This is a weird thing. So, what they had was this sort of grayscale character wandering around like a sort of temple ruin or something. And everything just had a gray texture on it. And then they said, oh, and here's this famous, I didn't even know this painting. This is like a famous American painting. It's just called like Blue, Yellow, and Red or whatever.
Right.
And they showed the painting on the left. And then suddenly it was integrated into the game. So all the textures have... And it had done it... It looked quite nice, I thought. Like, it wasn't just like, we've looped the texture over everything. And it lifted little bits and, like, put it around. I think it's software that kind of learns based on kind of input from human response. And, they say, yeah, you did well on that one. Good. Mm-hmm. And then they instantly added Starry Night by Vincent van Gogh.
Right.
which, you know, made everything look all swirly. They did like a weird Pac-Man one. Did you see that?
Yeah, they said this was one of our favorites. I thought it looked horrible.
It did look horrible.
I think it's a proof of concept, right? This isn't exactly how this is going to work, but that's the kind of stuff you'll be able to do with it.
So in terms of things look like whether, you know, could games end up looking similar? I don't think the point is that like devs are going to be just applying various like presets that like come with the software.
Right.
I think they would like create their own image with like the colors and like sort of textures and things that they want, mm-hmm. then give it to Stadia, and Stadia will go, all right, I see. It's like a mood board, I think. I think you create a mood board, you give it to Stadia, and it goes, oh, I understand how you want this whole game to look. I'll just do it for you.
Sort of like color swatches, is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, a little bit.
Sort of like when you're painting a room, and it's like, well, you like this color, you might also like these colors. Exactly. They complement it.
But I think sort of with textures and things like that as well, like, you know, not just plain colors, but actual almost, what's the word, like haptic... Tactile is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah,
tactile textures on, you know, plastered on walls and things.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's cool. It's a really cool idea. They've also confirmed that crowd play will allow viewers of streams slash videos to like just jump straight in, just like we talked about earlier with the streaming. The most important one, as far as I'm concerned, is that they've got Jade Raymond, who you may not be familiar with, but you'll certainly be familiar with her work. She's the creator of Assassin's Creed, and she worked as the lead on Assassin's Creed 1 and 2 and worked on various things at EA for a while as well. They've brought her in to head up their first-party studio, which is called Stadia Games and Entertainment, which is not very exciting.
No.
But that means they'll actively be creating their own games.
Yeah.
We've had various platforms in the past. OnLive in particular is a prominent one that wanted to kickstart streaming, but they were reliant on third-party support. Mm. If Stadia gets the right people, if Google gets the right people involved and on board to create must-play experiences that can only be played on Stadia, that's how you build a platform.
Especially if they're...
That's how you do it.
If they're built for Stadia, you know, like, presumably that's going to reduce the number of issues, potentially, of, like, you know, porting across an old game onto a streaming service and being like, oh, hope this works with the technology.
And it would officially be the most powerful...
Yeah.
...sort of platform out there. I know people... Technically, it's running on a PC, so people could have a PC that powerful... But the games being developed for that extremely powerful PC are also being developed for PCs that aren't that powerful. Mm. Whereas this will be exclusively developed across the board for a platform that is extremely powerful and everyone can experience the same thing. Unless, which we'll get to in a minute, which it all hinges on, as we've spoken about numerous times and is the main concern with streaming. So it will also be able to support crazy multiplayer.
This sounded just mad.
So they were talking about how co-op games are sort of slowly dying out because as games get more advanced, once you have it sort of on screen twice, rendered on screen twice, locally, it becomes a bit too much for the consoles to handle, and it like just developers are doing it less and less now. However,
I'm all about trying to save local couch split screen.
Me too.
Yeah,
that's part of the reason why I love Borderlands so much is that you can have four players playing this ridiculous game at the same time.
Yeah.
Co-op games, they showed off a couple of tech demos for various sort of proof of concept games that they're designed very quickly. Well, I say very quickly, like in a few weeks, just to show off what could be done.
Yeah.
Co-op games, they've made something where you can view the perspective of several different teammates at once. So like it just came up with, what's player two doing? And it popped up in the corner. Player three, player four, player four, and it all just, because it's all streaming. It's not being rendered locally. So it's not an issue. They showed off a open world, fully destructible city with no stuttering or slowdown whatsoever.
Just stuff like collapsing around them and yeah.
That there's the potential for even a 1,000-person battle royale.
Yeah, that's the mad thing I was talking about. Like, would you even want to do that?
Well, that's the thing. Bigger is not always better.
1,000. What are the odds of coming first in a 1,000 game?
Imagine just playing for like over an hour and then just dying. And you came 450th.
Yeah. Right. I mean, playing a 1,000 competitive multiplayer game doesn't sound like that good. But on the other hand, a 1,000-player cooperative multiplayer game.
Yeah.
There's some sort of crazy, weird potential for that. Imagine 1,000 people working together to do something.
Yeah, building something. Imagine arriving in a Minecraft server with 1,000 people where no griefing's allowed and you're all working together to build something and you've got foremen like pointing you in the right direction and stuff. It would literally be like arriving at work. It would be unbelievable, but it would push games forward. But as I've noted here, the only way that would ever truly be feasible is if they made that themselves. Because while they really do need third-party support, it would take a lot of convincing and presumably a lot of money for, say, Ubisoft to decide to create from the ground up a 1,000-person Battle Royale game that's only going
to
be on this new platform.
It would have
platform.
To be exclusive, yeah.
Exactly, because nowhere else would be able to run it. So it would have to be an exclusive.
It's launching 2019.
It is. It's launching this year. No price confirmed yet. Or if there's a subscription or how that would work, or if you have to pay for games independently.
Yeah.
They've also said that there's going to be full cross-platform play.
Yeah.
With the options for players to import save data over, which is interesting.
There's certain aspects of this where you do actually feel like they kind of know some of the things that gamers want and appreciate. And, you know, sometimes these things, when a new thing comes out, it's full of big wig kind of boardroom ideas that don't actually work. But the idea that, you know, they said, oh, our personal favorite memories playing video games were couch co-op, you know, split screen. We want to try and bring that back.
Yeah.
You know, well, maybe people want to bring their save data over onto our platform. You know, that's just a quality of life kind of things that, you know, shows that they do actually understand gamers to an extent.
They do. They've clearly done a lot of research.
Yeah.
However, internet speeds.
Yeah.
If this is a streaming platform and you're talking about 4K, you're talking about 60 frames per second.
1,000 people.
I still don't think the internet's there yet. But
no.
Here's the thing that's been annoying me about how I've seen this unfolding and the reaction to it. Because obviously that's a huge concern and that's totally warranted and that's totally fair and I completely understand that.
Yeah.
However, you cannot... You shouldn't be so dismissive of it as a whole just because of that. Some people have seen that and said, well, streaming, get out of here, not interested.
Yeah.
This is definitely the future. We may not be ready for it yet. We were talking about whoever takes that first step, it could be a career ender for them because people aren't ready. If Google is their first step into the world of gaming and they have the capital to back it up, they can bring the right people on board, they can advertise how they want it, they can get the integration down, I think they're in the perfect place to take this first step to push the industry forward. And it doesn't sound like, apart from the fact that they're opening up a first-party studio, it doesn't sound yet like they really want to go toe-to-toe with the existing platform.
No.
Which I think means that people, especially video game enthusiasts, they're so resistant to change a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But they'll see this and go, well, you know, it's not going to beat Mario. Like, it doesn't have to beat Mario, but it can be a fantastic alternative with great ideas that pushes the industry forward by just being competition.
And depending on who gets on board, you might be, I mean, maybe not Mario, but you might be able to play a bunch of, you know, all the cross-platform kind of IP.
Potentially.
You might be able to play that on Stadia, perhaps in a better, more beautiful, more responsive way than ever before.
Yeah.
Unless your internet's not very good.
Exactly.
They showed, I think this was the worst thing for me, is that I've seen a 3-second clip on Twitter. It was kind of out. It was lifted from the conference somewhere, and I didn't see it in context. But basically, someone was playing Assassin's Creed. Yep. They walked up to this ledge. They pressed the A button, and on the third press, the character jumped up. And it's like, this is your own conference. You were ready for this. This is, you've got all your own infrastructure set up. This is the best case scenario for that to work seamlessly.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem to work. Now, you know, sometimes there are just technical issues and you can't help it. They're live on the internet streaming this reveal. You know, unfortunately, that happened.
Yeah.
We'll have to see, I guess, just how responsive it is. But
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, fundamentally, I think it's got some really interesting and very exciting ideas. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there, like the integration of sharing and being able to, I think saving share states is huge.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be, I really do think that's going to be a game changer.
Joining a streamer's game very easily.
Exactly. If you're going to make a console about streaming, it needs to have this kind of integration. And Google has the money and the clout to actually make that happen. Fundamentally, though, it's going to be down to internet speed.
Yeah.
It's going to be down to price points. And it's going to be down to, it's going to be completely limited by what's actually released on there.
Which developers get on board.
They need the third party support. They need the first party to really drive it and make, you know, have there be experiences that cannot be enjoyed anywhere else. that's what it's going to be: games, price, and internet speeds, and that's it. You know, immediately some people just aren't going to be able to use this.
No,
they're just not going to, just because of where they live.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's difficult. And Google knows that. And there's going to be, unless they announce that, hey, we're going to sort fiber to everyone.
Yeah.
If you sign your life rights away to us.
Yeah.
There's going to be people who just cannot play this.
Mm-hmm.
But for those people who can, they need to do the right things to make sure that they want to do it. And it sounds like they might be doing that.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing, you know, you say it's going to take someone to make that first step into cloud gaming, streamed gaming.
Yeah.
And it could be a career ender. And I think you'd be right if you were talking about, you know, Microsoft, for example. If they took the leap and it just went horribly wrong,
yeah,
that could really, like, destroy the Xbox fan base to an extent. Google, you know, coming in without a precedent, without a console, you know, at least they're not going to alienate a current console audience that they have, because they don't have that. You know, they've not made an announcement that's made all of their current players go, oh no, I don't like this anymore.
Yeah.
So if this goes wrong for them, I mean, evidently they must have pumped so much money into just building the infrastructure alone for this.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there'd be some heavy losses, but equally, you know, Google are a massive corporation.
They'll be all right.
It would be just a bit of a dent, you know?
Yeah.
So if anyone was going to do it and take the risk, I'm kind of glad that it's Google and not Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo or Steam, because it matters less if it goes wrong for them, and it's good of them to try, at least.
I agree. It could be another Google Plus.
Yeah.
It could go the way of Google Plus, and everyone's like, no, and then just is forced to use it, and then nobody ends up actually using it for its true purpose, apart from changing your profile photo and then thinking, oh God, how do I get back to YouTube now? I'm stuck in Google Plus.
Yeah.
What's a circle? I can't get out of the circle. It could go that way. However, the ideas that they've presented here are so interesting that you've got to imagine Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo are sat up and paying attention.
Yeah.
Of course they are, but just in terms of the ideas that are presented here, if they're looking to the future, presumably the PlayStation 5 is too far along in R&D and development now for it to actually, for sort of game-changing ideas that have been brought up this week to be implemented at this stage. But certainly looking forwards, they'll be paying a close eye on, you know, to what Google are doing.
Yeah.
And we may well see it on other platforms as well.
And Sony, you know, in developing the PlayStation 5, they will have always known that, like, cloud gaming is an option. And they will have weighed up whether they want to do it or not.
But they've got PlayStation now already.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's true.
It's just not very well supported.
But assuming it's probably not massively integrated, isn't it, as a, you know, a huge part of the PS5, that will have been because they made that decision and thought, well, no, that's not for us right now. But maybe if they see, you know, it's like we were saying, it's going to take someone to test the waters and try and slowly bring people over. A little bit like how the Wii did it with motion controls, you know.
Yeah.
And there were some motion control consoles before then, some really retro ones as well. Like, they go back like 10, 20 years sometimes, really janky ones. But, you know, the Wii did that. And since then, now it's an integral part of, like, VR headsets and things. And so, this could be the first big step into true cloud gaming.
Absolutely. This could be a very real game changer. So please let us know what you think about it in the comments below. And also tweet us and let us know your thoughts too. Again, try not to be so cynical just yet. I know there's a lot of hurdles for Google to overcome here, but certainly the ideas presented seem pretty well realized. Mm. And again, even if it goes the way of Google Plus, it could end up changing things just by virtue of having existed and being spoken about in the first place.
Yeah.
So let us know.
The other platforms into gear.
Exactly. Yeah. And more competition is good as well. Like, it just drives innovation, and I think that's just a good thing. Peter.
Yeah.
Where can the listening/viewing public find us if they want to?
We are everywhere, pretty much everywhere, at Team Triple Jump. So our YouTube channel, if you're not watching there right now, is youtube.com/Team Triple Jump.
Yeah.
We also stream on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. That's twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. And we have a Patreon if you wish to support us. That would be very nice. That's patreon.com/Team Triple Jump.
In fact, all the questions today came from patrons.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd say that.
There are various benefits. Seeing Worst Games Ever 2 days early and so on and so forth.
Which you did yesterday, if you're listening on the day of release.
Absolutely. The other way you can support us is by going to our website, triplejuu.mp. That's triplej.mup/shop. Mm-hmm. And we have a store there where we're selling all kinds of merch. I'm not wearing mine today.
I'm wearing a hoodie.
It's in the wash.
And there are also two mugs on the table. Yeah. There's two mugs sat behind the table.
I'm wearing the swimming costume underneath.
You are. Peter's always wearing it.
Yeah. So the podcast is now, it's now everywhere, isn't it?
It's now everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, so on. If you want to find it at the source, play.acast.com/s/triplejump. There are links in the description of all the videos now with all the relevant podcast links if you want to go check them out. Hmm. And I think there's one last thing.
Yeah, we've got a Discord, which is one of the Patreon rewards is there's an exclusive Discord room.
Yes.
But you can join it if you're not a patron. You just can't get in the special room. That's bit.ly/TeamTripleJump.
Yes. And I think one of the other rewards is a monthly Discord chat, live chat with us. Yep. Where you can ask questions and we will answer them. I think we're going to try and do that next week.
We'll be speaking to you on actual audio waves live.
We're going to do a Patreon post about that. So if you're already a Patreon, look out for that. And we will try and realize that in the next week or so. Mm. So look out for that. In terms of our output, lists go out every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday and Thursday.
3 p.m. GMT.
We did it Wednesday, the week just gone, because of shuffling things around. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly. This week happened to be a worst game, so go and watch it if you'd like.
It was good.
Really appreciate it. And the podcast is every other Saturday. Peter,
Thank
you very much for coming along.
Thank you very much for having me along.
We ran a little long there. It was an important, very important discussion. So again, please do let us know what you think in the comments below. We'll be back next Saturday. Thank you very much for watching / listening. And we'll see you next time.
We will. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.